This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Market Talk for the month of April. I'm Frances Watson, and this week we'll be looking at last Friday's US employment data. We'll be asking what economic activity is telling us more generally about the state of the global economy, and how did markets react to the new governor of the Bank of Japan being sworn in at the weekend. We'll also be eagerly awaiting that US CPI number and asking what can upcoming Q1 results tell us about the extent of the recent banking stress. Well, chatting to us, perfectly stress-free, all about these developments and more, is Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, how are you?
Yeah, I don't know about stress-free, but yeah, it's nice to have a small break after the the ructions in the global banking system over the last few weeks, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It was nice to down tools from our jobs, albeit temporarily, wasn't it? Now, talking of jobs, of course, we got those US employment data just before we all went on our break. Still strong, Ben. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, there was a deceleration. Remember, there was huge jobs creation earlier this year, sort of 500,000 plus on the month. That dropped down to a little over 200,000. I think it was 236,000. These all get revised, to be honest, so it's spurious accuracy. But so it went down a little bit, but still strong enough to be, you know, more jobs created than people joining the workforce. On the other measure of the unemployment rate for the US, the unemployment rate fell from 3.6 to 3.5%. So that still feels pretty strong. There was a positive as well, more participation. Some people came back into the workforce as well, according to this to the data. So strong strong unemployment data, even though people rejoin the workforce. So basically, the Fed still has to focus on inflation. I mean, basically, the labor market is still too tight for comfort, and that's increasing, according to, you know, market pricing, increasing the chance of a rate hike the next time that they meet. So still work to be done. But remember, we haven't yet got the full impact of the bank. The bank volatility that we saw. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's too soon to see what that is. So I guess the Fed still has to weigh that up a little.
So against that background and the fact that we haven't got any signs of that recent stress that we've seen filtering through, does economic activity that we've looked at in the US and Europe more generally, is that kind of yesterday's story then, would you say?
It is a little bit. I mean, it's been mixed. The PMIs, the sentiment indicators, PMIs are all sort of, yeah, okay. They're in the low 50s. So in general, there's been a bit of weakness, bit of strength as well within that. But generally, it's shown that the economy is, both in Europe and the US, is okay, probably still out of recession, not in a recession right now. But as you said, we've got to wait for the impact of that credit tightening. The big data point that we're waiting for is the senior loan officer survey from the Fed. And that's going to be, it's going to be released before the Fed meeting in May. So that's, the Fed meeting is the 2nd and 3rd of May. So it'll be released before then. That'll tell us, give us a better idea about how much credit conditions have tightened. But then you've got to wait and see what the impact is on economic activity, because, you know, once you tighten the credit conditions, then maybe companies will start to invest a little bit less, etc., and that will lead to slowing growth. So it's all a bit of a lag. So we're playing a bit of a waiting game, and we, you know, like the Fed, we're all trying to judge what this means in the future, and the Fed will be doing that when they make policy in May. I still think they probably will hike 25 basis points in May, and that's the most likely result that's priced into markets right now. It's not a done deal, but that's the most likely scenario, I think.
Well, of course, waiting is over for the new governor of the Bank of Japan, who I think was sworn in at the weekend, and maintaining the status quo for now, it seems.
Yes, words are cheap at the minute, aren't they? He doesn't have to make a decision. There's no policy meeting until the end of April. I suppose there is a risk that end of April that he decides to reverse course from the yield curve control that's been put in place for a long while now. It's probably too soon to do that. You know, you don't want to have your first meeting create massive amounts of disruption. But the clock is ticking there. Inflation, like everywhere else, is generally surprised to the upside in Japan. It's still at a low level, but it's still surprised to the upside. And it looks as though some momentum behind it. So it's going to have a tough decision to make, probably not this time around, maybe later in the year. And yeah, markets, I suppose, if you're an investor, there is a chance that he does something in April. And by his rhetoric, I suppose that chance reduced, and therefore, you know, slightly easier policy means slightly weaker yen. But that's all by the by. I think the big interesting volatility will be later in the year.
Okay. All right. Well, look, let's go from Japan to China and our current thinking, because there was some credit data released for China earlier this week. Just talk us through your thoughts on inflation and the property sector and so forth.
Yeah. So China, I mean, we've been talking about China for a little while now, haven't we? So it's in the midst of what has been a tricky last few months, China's a positive story, isn't it? Reopening. The credit data, so they announced monthly credit creation, has surprised positively. So it looks as though there's more credit being created. We're not entirely sure if that's because companies are drawing down loans because they're still struggling or they're investing. There's a little bit of the property market rebound in there as well. But by and large, it's been positive, suggesting that the economy continues to strengthen as it reopens. And the good point about this is that we're not seeing the same inflation pressure that we've seen just about everywhere else in the world when you've reopened. China's inflation, which we also got this week as well, is lower than expectations. I very rarely say that, and is very subdued. The central bank cut the reserve rate requirement a few weeks ago to try and spur a little bit more activity. That inflation data suggests that they've got more room to support markets as well. So that's a positive. And the property market, the latest data in the property sector as well has been a bit more encouraging. Sounds as though people are going out and buying a new house, a second house, whatever it might be, but does sound as though that's getting a little bit of momentum. There's still a divide between the strong companies and the weak companies, absolutely, but it's all pointing in the right direction. And finally, on China as well, there's been more positive technology sector headlines around Alibaba, for example, has announced a restructuring, splitting into 6 units, which could be about trying to control or better regulate themselves. Also, maybe they could be looking to raise money in the future. That's a potential. And that presumably has had an okay from the Chinese regulators, and which have historically over the last couple of years been quite negative to the technology sector. So that's a positive step.
Yeah,
exactly. So maybe this is positive, and you know, everything is pointing, I think, in a more positive way for China and potentially for China investments.
Should we stay with China? Because what caught my eye was Brazil's president, actually, Lula da Silva, coming down with a view to signing this bilateral trade agreement between Brazil and China. But they're not going to be trading in the US dollar. They're going to be sticking to their own local currencies, real and renminbi. What does that signal? Is that an early sign that maybe King Dollar has lost its crown?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's too early, obviously. I mean, the dollar is just so much a dominant currency. But it is interesting, isn't it, how you're getting that bilateral agreement. And there's been a few similar ones in the past. Also, Macron, the French president, was in China last week, and his rhetoric was sounding more positive than the US. I mean, if I'm trying to be positive about geopolitics for a second, we'll talk about the dollar in a minute, but just about geopolitics, as people start to meet each other face-to-face post-COVID, maybe there's some of these so some of this tension will be slightly less aggressive, and you'll start to see more agreements, more softening of the rhetoric, and maybe a more positive geopolitical backdrop going forward. Of course, we also had issues with the president of Taiwan visiting the US, of course, so that's it's definitely not all positive, but you know, there are some signs, aren't there, that is a positive. And then on the dollar, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for why countries might want to reduce their reliance on the dollar. I mean, the dollar can be weaponized. We've seen that with what happened with sanctions against Russia, for example. So there are some motivations to try and reduce your exposure to it. But like I said, it's so dominant right now, and there's no alternative. What do you go to? Do you, Do you choose to use the euro? Well, I mean, Europe and the US are such strong allies. So there's not much of a diversification there, is there? Or you could try to use the renminbi, but it's not really an international currency. So you can't really do that. You could do these bilateral agreements between Brazil and China, but it cannot replace the dollar as it stands. So, yeah, I think this is just, yeah, maybe slightly undermining the King dollar, but it'll have a long reign to come, I suspect.
I was going to say gold for all those gold bugs out there who'll be.
Yeah. Exactly.
Say, exactly. Go, go, go. But anyway, that's another conversation, isn't it? So look, apart from the China news, of course, the big number, as you mentioned, this week is US CPI, and all eyes on that once again.
Yeah, it seems to be the most important data point of the week. So it's later today, so by the time people are listening to this, they'll have heard what it is. I mean, it's the point is that whatever it comes out, I mean, barring a massive surprise, it's currently, or the last month was at 5.5%. That's core CPI, which is the important data point, which is still miles too high. And so what I was saying earlier about the Federal Reserve, they are trying to judge what the credit conditions tightening has been since the banking volatility. But at the back of their mind, they've still got CPI far too high. They've still got a very tight labor market. And that's probably why they continue to have to hike interest rates. They hiked last time, and chances are they'll probably hike again in May. But if it was to fall considerably from 5.5, you know, the investors would get a little bit of hope. They'll see the trajectory falling. They'll say, well, by the end of the year, maybe it'll fall enough such that the Federal Reserve can ease the pressure. So it is a very important number. But nonetheless, I think for now, we're going to continue to see rates remaining pretty high from the Fed.
Okay, well, now on the financial horizon, we are heading firmly into Q1 earnings season. The banks are reporting at the end of this week already. You've mentioned about pressures and seeing signs. You've mentioned the SLO survey. Have you got anything more to add that what signs do we look for?
Well, yeah, so the big banks always start off the earnings season. So that's the end of this week. Will be some of the big US banks. But the big US banks have not been the issue here. It's been these sort of smaller, middle-sized US banks. The big banks have actually benefited from some of that deposit coming out of the smaller banks. So I don't think that they will be, we won't see any significant, I don't think, any significant negative surprises from the big banks. But, yeah, focus on those middle or small banks. Let's see. There could be some more negative surprises I would be worried about. Overall, though, I think this earnings season, so if you look at the overall analyst expectations, this is just taken from Icon, it's for a fall in earnings compared to Q1 last year of about 5%. So we're starting to see earnings decline year on year. If we get a recession, I think the earnings decline will be more like 20 to 25%. So this is still early days. We haven't got a recession. It's just not quite as good an economic backdrop, a macro backdrop, as it was last year. So we're starting to see some decline, but there could be further to fall. So yeah, I think you should obviously watch out for those middle, smaller banks in the US. And watch out, of course, for how companies say about the future. But often companies find it just as hard as we do to predict stuff in the future. So let's see. If we get that recession, there's a lot of downside risk, I think.
OK, well, something that's much easier to predict, which you have up your sleeve anyway, is your number for the month. So what is it and why, Ben?
Well, you did put it. You just spoke about gold. I was going to say the number for the month was 2,000. That's where gold is in terms of dollars per ounce, which is just about, it's within touching distance. Maybe by the time people listen to this, it will have hit the all-time high. So there you go. With everything else being falling around our ears, gold has been on a 10, lots of cryptocurrencies as well, which may or may not be linked. I don't want to make any statements there. It's interesting that gold has been strong for various reasons. I think the dollar weakness has helped. So during this period where the Fed has maybe been asked to support markets a little bit more because of what's happening with the banking sector, maybe they'll do fewer rate hikes than previously thought. So the dollar has been weaker on the back of that. And, you know, the gold is priced in dollars, so it goes up in value. I do think the bank panic sort of helped a bit, you know, people just going for safety. They've gold is seen as a safety place as well. Also, it can be seen as an inflation hedge. So, you know, maybe that's another place that's been benefiting from it. But I don't think it's a replacement for the US dollar. It's going to be tricky to transact. We're all used to using our credit cards, aren't we? So I don't think going back to chiseling off a little bit of gold and paying for our groceries is going to be any help. But nonetheless, as an investment, it's been quite successful so far over the last few months, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that's great. Well, great as always to hear your views. Thanks so much for talking to us today, Ben. And thank you to all our listeners for listening.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2022. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.